Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, it's time for another toy department, which means we have almost made it to Friday in my world. You're going to be Friday by the time you hear this, I assume. Well, so yeah. Congratulations.
It's not almost certainly going to be Friday by the time anyone hears this. I mean, I'll be lucky to get it posted before midnight Pacific time.
Indeed. Besides, no one knows what day of the week it is anymore anyway, right?
No, days of the week don't matter. Days of the week are so 2019, man.
Are we in times? Because I haven't heard enough about whether these are times that we're in now. we've got a lot to cover this week. Besides days of the weeks and times, we watched quite a bunch of stuff.
Yeah,
I watched one less thing than you did, which we'll get into later. This was not slacking on my part.
Not an oversight. Usually it's an oversight.
Correct. But let's start with Top Chef, which is, I think, the thing that we watched most recently. And on
I was surprised you did not make use of the transition that I set up for you. Do you know what it was?
No.
Well, do you happen to remember what punk ass Leanne had to say in her ITM?
She did more than one ITM.
Yeah, you're right. But it was when it was in Last Chance Kitchen, her Last Chance Kitchen ITM, when Kevin was like, "I'm making a deconstructed Benedict."
Oh, that was so 2006. I didn't get the reference, but that's good.
Well, just because I said something was so 2019, you know, I thought you had an opportunity there.
Yes, yeah.
But let's just start there, man. All hail, Leanne is dead.
I was just about to ask. On a scale of 9 to 10, how happy are you that Leanne has been eliminated?
Not only is it a 10, but it's like an 11 because the judges table actually had me going for a second that they were considering eliminating Melissa. And if they had eliminated Melissa after Leanne cooked two bullshit dishes and fucked them both up, I was maybe gonna quit Top Chef forever.
I had that one all the way. To me, this was only slightly more suspenseful than last week's. You know what I mean? Like,
see,
it was clear
the
other two had one good dish and one bad dish, and she clearly had two quite bad dishes.
You're right. You know? And I should have, but like Leanne has escaped so many times so far that when they were like, "Man, that salad was just so trash. I can't believe she put it on the plate." I was like, "They're not. They couldn't eliminate Melissa here."
And it's true, not everyone loved the congee, by the way, right? There was too much
ham.
Yeah,
but a couple people loved it. So I think that's what saved her. And Malarkey made one good thing, too. I mean, look, Leanne was the worst chef there, right? I mean, we can all agree on that.
I think that's right. Stephanie might be giving her a run for her money.
But Stephanie is in a... I feel like Stephanie has a bigger challenge than a lot of these chefs, but in the fact that she's like a personal chef.
Yeah.
So many more things take her out of her element than other chefs on here. And I got to say, like, she kind of killed it today because she made that crazy breakfast salad deal that was the only thing that had any eggs in it. And everyone was like, "Man, that looks awful." But actually, it tastes good.
Yeah, but it looks awful. And half the time, she doesn't know what she's making. I mean, I think we can all agree she's not very long for the competition, right?
Well, yeah.
You know
I mean, now she's probably the worst chef, right?
Yeah.
Because I got to say, the other person I would have had around the bottom is probably Karen.
Karen's been cooking well lately, I feel like, though.
That's what I was going to say, particularly today when she was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, and then she threw together that corn cake, and everybody was like, oh, the corn cake was so good. Like,
yeah.
Our girl Kelsey was like, the corn cake, or no, maybe it was Brooke, was like, the corn cake was just so flavorful. It tasted so delicious, and it was Cornish, and yeah, all that stuff. So that was exciting. I did kind of have a feeling when Leanne finally won the quick fire that she was out of here today.
Yeah.
And then I thought the other big story, I will say, I even wrote down Leanne cranking out a highly professional empanada outdoors in a quick fire challenge was super impressive.
Yeah, you got to give it to her.
You got to give it to her for her quick fire win. She absolutely deserved that. But good riddance. The only other thing I really wrote down was this whole episode was like a Brian Voltaggio story.
Yeah.
Because in the quick fire, he went classic Voltaggio, way overdid it, and just like muddled the whole thing up, basically. He can't get out of his own way. And then he was the one, because this is who he is, at the buffet, you know, serve yourself situation, who somehow cranked out two elevated, high quality, like fine dining restaurant dishes that were fantastic out of catering supplies.
What did they say? What did Tom say? He was like, there was a term for the carrots. He was like,
it was something like commissary carrots. That's not what it was, but it was something very dismissive.
Commissary carrots and a box of raisins.
Yeah. He's like, you took shitty carrots and shitty raisins and you made fine dining. Holy mother of God. And of course, everyone else on the buffet line was like, fucking Voltaggio. He's making us look bad.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the guy I've been trying to, like, you know, say this season is like, don't count that guy out, you know, and like on his day, he can beat anybody.
And you're right.
Because he is an artist, you know?
But that's the thing about him is like, he's such an artist. Brian Voltaggio's failures almost all violate the KISS rule.
Yeah. That's true. And I have to say, I guess this is mean. I really enjoy Brian Voltaggio Top Chef. I root for Brian Voltaggio Top Chef. It's entirely based on his food, though, right? Like, you know, when poor guy has to come up with a joke in the ITMs, it's rough.
Oh, he had a brutal pun. What was it?
Yeah, it's rough.
He had one particularly brutal pun about
even he was like, yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah. It was something about the beans. By the way, shout out who's it called?
Bush's Beans?
Bush's, thank you.
Yeah. I got to say,
big product placement for Bush's today.
Yeah, I really felt like this episode was a lot of the in honor of Padma, I'll just say the least favorite things about Top Chef.
Yeah.
You know, although highly aggressive product placement.
Yeah. I do like when they put them in awkward circumstances. And this was particularly awkward.
Particularly. But it was basically you had two challenges that were like quick fires, like with the.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, to me, serving 200 moms brunch in a limited pantry is hard enough, but like, not letting them plan, you know, and everyone has to run in there and kind of
and
do their ingredients.
Two
like,
dishes and
like I really felt like they went out of their way to try to sort of make it a shit show. And then you know, the episode sort of padded with them ziplining and crap. You know
I'll
what
agree.
I mean?
I agree with that. I don't need any of that.
Yeah. So
I would have rather had more moms and less ziplining.
Yeah, some of those moms are pretty interesting.
It's also like if they had let the moms vote, it would have just been like sexy male chefs at the top.
It's true.
And all the women at the bottom.
Yeah, those women didn't think Voltaggio was boring. I'll say that.
No, they did not. Voltaggio is hot with the moms.
Yeah. Who knew? Who knew? But yeah, I thought this was a less than stellar episode, although I admit some of that might have just been bitterness. Like going, God, Kevin is so much better than these other chefs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he showed it. And by the way, as satisfying as it was to have Leanne screw up brunch, which is her signature thing, it was arguably even more satisfying to have Southern Kevin, who's like, eggs? What are those? Beat her in an egg cooking challenge where, like, I don't even think it was close. It seemed like Tom over-dramatized it when he was doing the selection because he kicked her ass on the over-easy egg, which she should kill herself, frankly. Right. That's how embarrassed she should be about that. She barely got him on the omelet, and then I was not buying her Benedict. The sauce looked bad, and Tom was like, immediately when he tasted it, was like, ooh, what's that sauce? What's in there? It's not hollandaise.
Yeah, no, I think you might be right about that. But I would also say that Kevin beat her. Like, it wasn't, you know,
he's awesome.
Three really good egg dishes.
100%. And she threw shade at him deconstructing a Benedict, which is asinine since she also essentially deconstructed a Benedict.
I will give her, there is a very, like, Wiley Dufresne, like, you know, Richard Blaze first season on Top Chef, you know, vibe to that term, deconstruction.
Okay, fine, but who cares? But,
you know, it's a little bit like, you know, at that point, you're LeBradford Smith saying, "Mike, nice game" to Michael Jordan, you know what
right.
I mean? Like,
well, and also,
right
just
or
like,
not.
Just, dude, why are you a twat to everybody? You don't, like, that's why I don't like her, is because she's got snarky, like, obnoxious things to say about everyone, and she wants to make excuses about herself. It's ridiculous. There was even a moment where, like, Tom said something about one of her crap dishes that got her eliminated, and she did a, like, oh, really? That's not what I think, but whatever sort of thing to him. And I was like, lady, this is why I don't like you.
You don't like her, but the other chefs really seem to. You gotta admit.
I mean, I'm prepared to admit that none of the other chefs seem to outwardly hate her. But they might just be polite.
That's fair. All right, I'm going to use this discussion of hate and competitive fire and shade to segue into The Last Dance, if that's okay with you.
Totally fine with me. Although, quickly, I just think we should say Gregory's the favorite now, right?
The favorite?
Yeah, I thought this was a stumble for Melissa.
Sure, I think a stumble for Melissa, but it's, you know, she's not in any worse position to win the competition, I don't think.
No, but if we're, how about this? Gregory is clearly number one in the power rankings.
Okay, I'm not clear, but I'll give you number one. Yeah,
like,
I think that's fair.
I'm not even. You're right. Like, this week doesn't affect even next week, much less the final. So we don't. It doesn't probably change the odds of who's going to win. But, like, Gregory pulled ahead this week. He still really hasn't had a bad week, and he continues to be top three in almost everything.
Yeah. Yeah, he got high marks for a fruit salad somehow.
Tom
was embarrassed.
Tom was embarrassed at how much he liked Gregory's fruit salad. So that tells you how good Gregory is doing right now. And he's just a very charming, sweet-seeming man.
Yeah, I got nothing bad to say about Gregory. And I will say next week's episode looks pretty good from the trailer.
It did.
So,
yeah, it did.
After a couple of down ones, I got some strong hope it's going to rebound. So Last Dance. You know, this was, I think maybe these were the two episodes that I think formed a lot of what people's idea of this show was going to be, right? The idea of, you know, we're going to get Michael's take on the competitive fire
and all that goes with that, the pettiness and whatever, plus some shades of the how he felt about his dad's murder and, you know, what happened with him leaving, all of that, you know, in there. And then with the splash of tremendously rare footage, some of which was amazing. I mean, those Space Jam scrimmages, come on.
Oh, my God. You know, I think it was Simmons I heard talking about, I would have watched an hour of that, and I guess it turns out that was it.
Like, yeah.
For whatever reason, that's the only footage they have of those scrimmages. Because that's, like, I would watch as much of that game as was available. I'd watch.
Oh, 100%.
The whole game. I'd watch their whole pickup game from every day of shooting if that was available to me.
Do you buy the theory that that's kind of the genesis of the everyone goes out to LA and gets together in a lifetime? And
I buy that. Like so many, you know, the thing with sports is like a lot of this stuff is more organic than people would describe it. And I think that the LA thing is more organic than just Mike did it once and everyone started going to LA after that. I think that's probably part of the wave of guys spending summers in LA though, and then buying homes in LA and then all being there and working out together and so on and so forth, you know?
Mm.
But the fact of the matter is, like, the reason there are games in LA, like, not everyone's there. The reason there are games in LA is because a lot of guys live there in the off season, and I think that's just something that has happened as a matter of course, with guys becoming super rich and wanting to get into other stuff after their careers.
So now that we are 4/5 of the way into this thing, have you moved at all on Michael through the course of this?
How do you mean? Like my opinion of him as a person or a player, or?
Well, yeah, either, honestly. I mean, I feel like your opinion as a player was always probably pretty solid as someone who was, you know, in Chicago during that time. Has your opinion as has your opinion on either changed after watching this?
Not really. I mean, look, I want to be careful because I think there's been a lot of great stuff here. And a lot of stuff we haven't seen. But I don't know how much there is that I didn't know about Michael. You know, I've had my memory jogged on some things. I've had visuals put to my understanding of a lot of things. Particularly in these two episodes. But I don't know if any. To me, the biggest surprise here is just that Michael seems to be being pretty honest and forthcoming, as far as I can tell. Otherwise, none of the like facts and figures and stories surprise me that much because I've heard a version of most of them before. It's exciting to hear Michael tell them, and it's exciting to see video of stuff that I had only heard about. And it's great to relive it, but I don't feel like this is a learning experience for me necessarily, if that makes sense.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I guess I would say the same. There are some things like I probably knew about the Bradford Smith thing and had just forgotten about it.
Right.
You know, somewhere along the way. So something like that sort of jogs your memory.
Yeah. I mean, like I had totally forgotten that Scottie Pippen did the surgery thing. 1.8 seconds, obviously, I remembered. But I had forgotten that Scottie waited to get his surgery because that was a big deal. People were pissed. So, like, yeah, my memory's been jogged on things like that, certainly.
I just don't and I think you'll find this unsurprising. Like, I just don't buy the Jordan's thesis, essentially, that I had to be a bully and a dick to achieve greatness, you know.
Okay, let me stop you there for 1 second. Because I think, first of all, I, I think Dick is more apt than Bully, for what it's worth.
Oh, I definitely think he was a bully.
Well, except a bully, like, the bully dynamic is not what was happening here. Because the bully dynamic is, like, anger and insecurity turned out, you know, felt inwards and turned outwards. Jordan was see. I don't think that's
like
what
you're making my point.
Oh, I don't. I don't think Jordan suffers from insecurity at all, and I don't know that anger was really a part of it. I think he's psychotically
the man that gave that Hall of Fame speech. You don't think is carrying around some anger and insecurity?
Not well. Yeah, in his own way. In his own way, sure. But I don't think that's what he's doing. I don't think he's lashing out of anger and insecurity when he's berating guys. I think he's I think he really believes in his soul that that's what it takes to motivate people. And in part, I think that's because that's what it took to motivate himself. And so I also think, as and Steve Kerr made this point, I don't think there's much debate about this. I also think he believed I am fire testing you for the fire of the postseason. And let's put aside whether he's right or wrong for the moment. That's not bullying. It like the behavioral result might be similar or even identical. And it's definitely not being a good guy. It's definitely being a dick. But to me, bullying means something different. And Michael wasn't flexing his power. He was legitimately psychotically competitive, trying to work towards a goal of winning, which
he flexes power plenty. It's just on people who weren't in this documentary. So this is why do you think Luke Longley is not in this documentary?
Oh, I don't think that's true at all.
I never
I mean
heard
at least that's
about
that's what I've been hearing it plenty the last couple of days.
What, that Luke Longley refused to be in the documentary or what?
Yes, that Luke Longley refused to be in the documentary, that he didn't like playing with Jordan and doesn't like talking about it.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't think that means...
There are certainly guys that Jordan drummed out of Chicago, no?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yes, yes.
And that's fine. Like, I'm not saying that definitively proves he's a bully, but I would also say... and obviously this is not in the period covered in the documentary for obvious reasons, but like, was Kwame Brown not bullied? You know what I mean? And I understand that, you know, if you talk to Jordan, and certainly that's what you're getting in this documentary, is that, oh, it's for a purpose. But I would submit to you that all of that is just backwards engineering to justify the homicidally competitive person within.
Yes, I'm not defending him. I'm just making a subtle distinction between homicidal competitiveness and, like, bully insecurity. I just think it's different. It's sort of beside the point. I don't know that anyone thought Michael Jordan was a sweetheart.
Yeah, well, look, no one did, I don't think. I mean, no one has read the Jordan rules anyway. But, you know, I mean, and obviously we're sort of putting this aside as two people who lived through it. You know, I think obviously there are a lot of people who never really got to see Michael Jordan play and may not know any of this stuff. Like, a lot of this may be new to them.
And by the way, in a cursory bit of research, it seems like Longley and Jordan are fine. He didn't like him early on, and they became closer later. He's talked about it plenty in the last decade.
Conspicuously, I'm just getting that from the Zach Lowe podcast, which I feel like is solid sourcing on this. But I could
Longley has previously documented a rough start to their relationship. The two would later form a bond, according to Longley.
But
that's
not
beside the point. He punched Steve Kerr in the face, you know.
Yeah,
and like that was clearly a dick move and not a nice person thing to do. But again, like, I don't know. To me, it's not bullying. It's a different thing that might be equally unlikable. And what I'll say about Michael, as far as all that goes, is this is what I think. It's very possible to lead without being an asshole. And generally speaking, when people lead by being an asshole, I'm not a huge fan of it. But I think, all told, the thing that stands out to me with Michael is, yeah, he was a dick about it sometimes, but he's very, very serious and real about it when he says, I'm never asking people to do stuff I wouldn't do. And he really, I think, saw it all in service of the greater goal of winning. And I'd rather play for a coach like Phil Jackson than a coach like Michael Jordan. And I'd rather play with a player like Scottie Pippen, theoretically, than a player like Michael Jordan. But I'm not sure Michael Jordan could have done this any other way. I think to be him, like, he had to be this.
Right. I mean, yeah, to be him, he had to be this. But I don't, you know, that's the problem, I think, is like we're essentially trying to mythologize it. And I think that Jordan will tell you that he had to be this way to be great. But that doesn't mean it's true, you know?
No,
so
I just believe it. I believe it to be true.
I think that anyone with, you know, look, when you look at the, you know, the consensus four or five other greatest players in the history of the game, none of them had this. They didn't need that.
That's not true.
It's not?
No. Well, I mean, four or five. Who are the four? Who are they?
All right. So if you're, you know, we'll I'll throw them out there. If you're going, LeBron, Kareem, Magic.
Kareem was a notorious dick, just not in this way.
Yeah, that's what I mean. But this is the specific kind of thing where I'm going to destroy you.
Larry Bird was just like this.
Russell was the guy that I left out. He was also not like this.
I think Russell was more like this than people talk about. My understanding is that Russell
was a legendarily kind teammate.
Okay.
Dave Zirin actually wrote a good piece about this, comparing Jordan and Russell, that I think, is a good read if you get a chance to check it out this week. He goes a little further in terms of calling Jordan a bully than I might have, but yeah, I mean, look, it's something I didn't say last week. Like, I all respect to the like him. I think he's unquestionably the greatest player of all time. I think he is a cool guy. You know what I mean? Like all the style and all of the charisma and the aesthetics of his game. Like full credit to all of it. Like you can't argue with the results. But man, I don't like this guy. And I don't like people who were like him. And, I think that you could get over the course of our NBA conversations, I think you would find the guys who are sort of in the Jordan mold in terms of temperament to be generally my least favorite players in the league. So I feel like I'm sort of consistent on that.
Yeah.
So it's just not me, you know, and I get it. Some people are more into it. It's just not me. And I don't think you need to go about life this way to succeed. And this seems to be a thing that where people really want to take life lessons from this guy's story for whatever reason.
Well, I think if there are life lessons, it's the ones about hard work and dedication, not treating other people the way you want to be treated. Like,
yeah,
like go ahead and combine Michael's work ethic and focus with the golden rule and you'll be good to go.
But it's also like, I mean, we talk about Michael's work ethic and focus, but at the same time, like, you know, this is a guy who retired early, who quit in the middle, who, you know, was gambling and drinking and smoking cigars at all hours. Like, it wasn't exactly like a 100% consistent single-minded focus, which I think sort of people sort of ignore when they now, talk see, about the work
that,
ethic.
I think that's a total mischaracterization. I really do.
Did I say anything that wasn't true? Or was it factually represented in this very documentary?
I mean, I guess not, but to say Michael Jordan was drinking and gambling and smoking cigars at all hours makes it sound a lot more careless than it was. He was not Dennis Rodman, and I don't think he was drinking very much. In the first half of his career, I'm not sure he was drinking at all.
How many times did we see him drinking beers in this documentary? Like, yeah, in freaking the stadium.
Yeah, but I think it's important to understand that, like, a 6'6", 200-something-pound super athlete having a Miller Lite is not just some dude irresponsibly tying one on. And by the same token,
look, I'm not saying he's Dennis Rodman.
Well, but
I'm
this
just
is
saying
the point.
That...
No, but this is important because people misunderstand the NBA lifestyle. Like, Michael Jordan hitting Atlantic City till midnight after a game is
a conservative reading of that
that's you going for a drink at a bar after work. It's not some wild party night. And I don't think it's hard for people to comprehend how different an NBA player's life is than anything they've ever lived or considered in their entire life. That's just the way it is. And these guys go into the club till midnight or even 2 a.m. Their workday starts at 7 p.m. They get off work at 11 p.m. Like, it's not that crazy to be having two beers until 2 a.m. and then sleep till noon. Like, that's okay. That's not that crazy of a lifestyle.
I think you may be downplaying the behavior a little bit. It's fine.
I really don't think I am.
He's not Rodman, All right.
I mean, he came in better shape than everyone pretty much every year.
Yeah, look, he worked hard. I'm not saying he didn't work hard. I'm saying that, you know, when people go, oh, well, if you just have that killer intensity and work as hard like Mike does, it's like, no, like Mike had tremendous ability and court instincts and savvy and all of those things that are a huge part of that package. And there are lots of guys who work really hard that don't do squat. So
yeah, of course there are. But to suggest that because of the cigars or gambling, Michael Jordan wasn't totally focused on winning and wasn't completely dedicated to basketball, I think is to totally misunderstand.
I mean, I guess what's going on. I would say that in a world where we killed Vince Carter for going to his graduation the day before a game, but Michael's in Atlantic City.
Hold on. That's a ridiculous. Come on, man. I'm obviously not criticizing Vince Carter or something like that.
I'm not saying that you are. That was not.
So then, what are we talking about?
You were being
a paper
defensive
tiger.
Like, it's not a paper tiger. Like,
what does Vince Carter have to do with it? And I would argue that Vince Carter, by the way, part of the reason he wasn't better is he was not as dedicated early in his career to changing his game and getting better as Michael Jordan, period.
I don't think that was a dedication issue. I think that was about teammates and team concepts and understanding, roles and things like that. But anyway, that's another story for another day. I just think that
you basically just said Vince Carter was as good as Michael Jordan, if not for his team.
No, I'm not saying that. No.
So what are you saying?
The reason that Vince Carter didn't become Michael Jordan is because he's not as good as Michael Jordan.
He has every single physical talent Michael Jordan
sure,
has.
Lots of guys in this league had every single physical talent that Michael Jordan had.
And one of the big reasons that none of those guys became Michael Jordan is because he worked harder than them and was more passionate than them about winning. And it wasn't always to his benefit as a human being. In fact, often it was to his detriment as a human being.
Yeah.
But that is the reason. And that's why I say, sure, some guys, I think leading ultimately is about authenticity. And it would have been just as hard for Michael Jordan to lead like Magic as it would have been for Magic to lead like Michael.
I guess. Yeah.
That's
but I look,
all.
I think there's,
it's
I
not
think
even
there's a reason.
Defense. It's
I,
just...
I think there's a reason that in the same way that Michael Jordan was maybe more successful on a basketball court than Magic. There's also a reason that Magic has been far more successful after the basketball court than
I
than
think
Michael.
That's right. Because listening and sharing and, you know, working with people is all critically important in the business world. Yeah. And those were more Magic skills than Michael skills. There's no question. I think you're totally right about that.
Yeah. All right.
Not that Jordan overall has been a business failure. He's just not a very good GM.
Yeah. Well, he hasn't really tried a lot of businesses, to be honest. Unless, you know, if you count Jordan Brand, I guess. But I don't think he's real active in the day-to-day of that.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea.
That's just a Nike subsidiary, essentially, that's cashing in on you know, on the brand equity.
Yeah, I mean, he controls it, but I don't know how much participation he has.
Yeah, correct. I don't think he's, you know, consulting on when the shoes are coming out. you know, look, I'm not here to say Michael wasn't great. I'm not here to say I'm not enjoying this documentary. I'm looking forward to it every week. I just don't think he is a person to be revered. Yes.
Well, he's an athlete to be revered, and I don't think we have to confuse that.
That's the distinction I'm drawing, yeah.
Yeah. So. I'm not sure anyone has ever said he was a person to be revered with any seriousness.
Well, I mean,
like you're talking
about. What do you
think
Be Like Mike was
about?
I think it's
about selling Gatorade is what it is. It's nothing. There's no moralistic statement about be a human being like Michael Jordan, the human being in a Gatorade commercial. And I don't think anyone who knows anything about Michael has ever said people should aspire to be the human being Michael Jordan is. I think the worker, the athlete, the competitor, sure. But again, I don't think we've learned much about who Michael Jordan, the human being, is. We've just gotten to see more of it. That's what I think is happening.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean you have to like him. I get it. I get why you don't like him. He's not the most likable human being.
Yep.
You want to talk about some other unlikable human beings?
I do. I have to say, you know, I mean, look, we celebrate the challenge.
Yes.
This was a dud episode. No?
I don't know if I would say it was here's what I don't understand. They basically took the events of one normal full episode and stretched them out.
Right. My theory is that they were like, wow, we have a really great elimination here. And enough content maybe in whatever the last episode was supposed to be, let's stretch it.
Yeah.
And that's how we wound up with this. You know what I mean?
Right. So I don't know if that's it was how a we dud because the stuff that happened, I'm here for all the Tori and Jordan and Jenna and Kaylee and all that drama that went down all episode long. I'm here for it, but it was like half an episode's worth of drama and the rest of it was filler.
Right. That's what I mean. It was a lot of filler. Look, it was nice to see Hurricane Nani again for a minute.
Yeah, it was. But apparently all you have to do is get her real liquored up and she immediately is Hurricane Nani again.
Oh yeah, that's always how it started. Right?
I know, but like, I can't believe she hasn't been drunk for 3 years. Like, where's it been?
No, she's been drunk sporadically. Like, Kyle recognized Hurricane Nani, right?
Yeah, he did.
And he's been on the show, what, 3 seasons?
And he got very excited.
Yeah, which means it was not the first time he'd seen it. So I think, you know, I think it's been there here and there. And she rightly has matured into like one of the ordinarily normal veterans of the team and just effing lost it for a minute. And that was fine. That was pretty good television.
Yeah. See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
The Hurricane Nani was good television. The whole, like, you know, is Jenna packing it in? Who's trying to get into the tribunal so that they can, like, why? And I told you last week that Jordan was playing with fire by having Tori be the House nominee.
You did. Yeah. Yeah. You did. I can't argue with that.
Jenna, man, like, first of all, they never should have thought she was checked. Like, Jenna, she's a beast. And she always
Barbie beast, if you will.
She is the fucking Barbie beast. And she she's always out of it. Even if she's not, like, distracted by Zach, she's a total space cadet all the time. Yeah. And then all she does is perform when it comes down to it. Like, they should have known better.
Yeah. I think in a one-on-one in particular, that's true.
Right? Yeah. Like,
yeah, you know. You're
and
right.
She's
and
bigger
they,
and
they
stronger than a lot of these girls.
Price. Yeah, it's absolutely true. Who would you have sent in as the House nominee then, Big T?
Yes. Or, I mean, we still don't know anything about Casey.
Well, I learned one thing about Casey.
That she has a girlfriend and Nani wants to bone. Yes, we did learn that.
You're right. That's two things about Casey. Also, Bailey, former Miss USA contestant.
Yeah.
That one came out of nowhere for me.
Also, the fact that she was Miss Congeniality really came out of nowhere.
Yep. Yeah. Yes, it did.
But I will say I'm coming around on them a little bit, the Bailey Swaggy C connection, which is good because there's no way they're not going to be around for a long time with all the screen time they're getting.
I agree with you. And it's noticeable because it's now happening in episodes where they're not even really that involved.
Yes.
You know, they're still getting screen time. They're like the Stella Artois bottle of people on the season. I see you, MTV product placement. Can we talk about Nelson for a second?
Bro. Every season he's on, he loses it for no reason and gets himself eliminated, and that is exactly what is happening right now.
Yeah, and look, I know learning not necessarily one of Corey's strengths.
But even he has this one figured
out. At what point is he going to wise up? Yeah, you know what I mean?
No, he has. They got some of it where he's like, bro, you know you get mad for no reason. Just stop it.
Well, and he said, I mean, I understand he said, like, you know, it's hurting me to be tied to him right now.
Yeah.
But he's still going to be tied to him.
Well,
that's what I'm talking about.
I mean, I don't know what he can do about that. Like, he's going to be associated with him, and, like, that's his boy, fair enough. But he's going to definitely start being – I guarantee you we're going to see Corey next week going around the house disavowing Nelson. I guarantee it. And he should, because Nelson – dude, how do you – someone made this point. How do you start a monologue apologizing to a lady for being disrespectful to women and finish it by calling another lady a giant slut? How does that happen?
With no self-respect. Yeah.
Yes. Without anything really happening in between except Kayla being like, technically the thing you said isn't true.
Well, and look, Kayla summed it up very well, I think, in that, like, this is not the first one of these apologies from Nelson have received, and they kind of stopped meaning anything, and that's, you know, it's true. He will lose his handle again, thinking that he has something figured out that he has completely wrong, and then eventually he'll apologize for it, and he'll be sincere in his desire to atone, but it won't effing mean anything.
Because the problem is he's so damn sincere in his original fury for no reason that, like, he believes equally in all of his crazy rants. You know what I mean? Just like he believes in the apology when he gives it, but he's too stupid to learn from it for the next time.
Right. And see, both of those guys, they need to, they keep wondering why they can't do anything. It's like, find a smart person and latch on to them. Like, yes. The two of you being dumb together.
I know.
Right? Like, find somebody who balances your strengths a little bit. You know what I mean? You know, you've had enough time in the game at this point to try to learn to do that. At the, you know, don't know if it's ever going to happen for them, you know?
Yeah, they're these two brawny meatheads, and they're too stupid to figure out they need a smart person around.
Yeah. Like, even, like, you could buddy up with Rogan, you know what I mean? It would change the game for either one of them, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't even, you don't need a super genius to make this happen.
You just need someone who can be like, no, chill. That's it. All you need is someone to be like, Nelson, chill. But you need Nelson to listen.
Yeah. Nelson, stop trying to figure out the thing that's coming up after the thing. That's not where you shine.
Like, they just need someone to tell, you know, I'm sure Wes or Bananas would gladly tell us in an ITM that this is chess, not checkers. But Nelson and Corey need someone to be like, just play checkers, okay?
Yeah.
Just sit over here and play some checkers. Don't worry about the chess, okay? We'll teach you the rules of chess later. Yes.
For bringing this analogy out of the toy department, but someone was talking about the president and saying that, like, people think that he's playing some kind of three-dimensional chess when in reality he's really just eating the pieces. Right. that's what I feel like. It's Nelson trying to play chess. He's just eating the pieces.
Yeah, that's and it's funny.
Step below checkers.
And yes, that's true. And what's funny now is Corey has advanced to a point where, like, he's sitting at his own checkers board, being like, "Dude, will you just come play checkers with me? I'm pretty sure that's not how chess works."
Yeah.
Like, look, I also don't know how chess works. But I'm pretty sure you don't eat the pieces.
Oh, man. When you got Bear, Bear and Josh on the same side going, what did you just say, man?
Not only like, that, but you've got Bear in this case credibly being a defender of women. Like, you have really gone off the rails, my friend.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So yeah, look, I stand by, not a great episode as challenges go, but there, you can find joy in any episode of the challenge, which is why it is amazing. And I have no doubt they will rebound as they get on schedule, right? We got a double elimination coming next week since they've been stretching this bad boy out a little bit. So that'll be a fun one. That'll be a fun one.
That was like it was a very short scenes from next week. All we got basically was it's a double elimination.
Yep.
And it was basically just TJ being like, I've about had it with you. You bunch of sissies. None of you have red skulls yet. Get in here and get them.
Yeah, I agree. I think TJ is right on that. And the choice to put D sort of in the mix of that. Just shows me people are, like, not really thinking. You know what I mean? It's right. Like, keep the Red Skull people out of this for now. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like, he's not someone you need to eliminate because you're I can't possibly beat her in a final.
Exactly.
Right? So, yeah. And well, like, Jordan played himself.
Jordan played himself. That's what happened. Well, he played Tori, really.
Right, you're right. Although I have to say, and I think it was Corey who was like, "Now's the time to." It's like, I don't know, bro. It's easier said than done if you think you're just gonna knock that dude out of the game because his girlfriend's gone. You know.
Well, the problem is to knock him out of the game. Someone's gonna have to beat him in an elimination.
Right. Exactly. And that's what I mean. Is like.
And okay, of the remaining guys, who would be your first pick? Yeah, I mean, I think this illustrates the problem.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean.
My first pick might have been Rogan, but he's already got the skull. He's not going to want to do it.
Yeah, he's not going to want to do it at all. I think that there are lots of guys in this house who could beat him in certain things, But like in a situation where you're coming in and blind, you don't know what the setup is going to be.
He's number one.
Yeah, there's nobody I would favor over him in elimination.
Yeah.
None that I can think of.
That's the problem. Like Wes and Bananas are definitely think they could beat him, but I would have Jordan as the favorite in almost anything.
Yeah. No, I agree. Including most of the puzzle based stuff, right? Which is the out for it a lot of things. So
yeah, I mean, basically, like where I don't have Jordan favored is something where his missing hand is an obvious liability. But
you know, yeah,
that doesn't happen that often, and sometimes it does, and he wins anyway. So
right.
I mean, that guy's that's tough. The thing. He's scary. If you're talking about winning an elimination, that dude is scary.
Yeah, which is why I think people just are going around running their mouth. But that's what makes the show.
Hey, we'll see. We'll see next week.
We will see. You want to talk about Jerry Seinfeld real quick?
Okay.
I think this is a quick one for me.
Yeah.
I felt like I wasn't watching Jerry Seinfeld, Master Comedian. I was watching Jerry Seinfeld, Famous Guy Does Jokes. You know,
that's so well put. I couldn't put my finger on it, but that's so good.
We've talked about sort of that Steve Martin idea of you get to a place as a comic where you can pretty much say anything and laugh. And I felt like that's like Seinfeld knew he was there. It's like, yeah, this I can come up here and I can kill with this audience, and I can make Netflix special money and lots of people watch it. And that's pretty much enough for me. You know?
Yeah, and it wasn't bad. It there were funny moments, but this was the least impressive set of stand up comedy I've ever watched from Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. And I've completely forgotten most of it already. So
yeah. It felt almost like it had been written by like a Jerry Seinfeld computer or a room full of Jerry Seinfeld impersonators, and then Jerry just did it.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like a well-crafted, practiced hour of comedy.
Yeah. And it's not like it's a stain on Jerry Seinfeld's legacy or resume or anything.
Nah, it's just not his best work.
Yeah. It just wasn't great.
You were right. That was quick.
Yeah. That one was kind of easy. And while we're in the quick department, why don't we go ahead and broach, I know this much is true.
Easy is the wrong word.
Yeah. Well, I will cede you the floor after I just say I watched the first 5 minutes of this, which, I won't spoil it, but contain the violent act.
It's the first upon, 5 minutes.
Yeah. Upon which the show hinges.
No, I mean, seriously, it's the first 5 minutes. Tell people exactly what you watched before you turned it off.
Okay. So, you come in and Mark Ruffalo is playing two characters who are twin brothers, I would assume. I didn't get far enough to find that out. They're definitely brothers. And the mentally unstable brother of the two is in a library praying and ranting and mumbling. And then when the librarian tells him to be quiet, he pulls out a knife and people start running. And then he hacks off his own hand, which they are not all that shy about showing you. And then I watched a cut to a scene in the depressing diner where both Mark Ruffalo's are having lunch together, and the one Mark Ruffalo is ranting about the government and paranoia. And I just felt unprepared in this particular moment to take this in. I felt I needed to invoke the Kolsky patented bad time entertainment theory and bow out there.
So I ended up watching the whole thing, even knowing that you would only watch 5 minutes and not really feeling like I had to. I think I was probably braced for that first 5 minutes because it was pretty bad time. That said, I think Mark Ruffalo is doing an exceptional thing. the two characters are so different. I mean, one is severely mentally ill, and also it looks to be 40 pounds heavier. And however they did that, it looks incredibly natural. I find him to be a really compelling actor. And as the episode went on, there's some other characters and actors that I was interested in seeing. And I'm not going to tell you it becomes a much better time, but I'm not even sure I'm going to watch another episode. But I will say, like, this is very well done television. Have you been watching The Plot Against America?
Yeah, I finished it.
Oh, you did. See, yeah. I haven't watched a single other episode of that since the first. So I don't know that I'm going to watch another episode of this, but I feel similarly that, like, all the pieces are in place for a well-made, high-quality television show. But I'm with you that just I'm not here for this now.
Yeah. And I wouldn't disagree with any of that, anything that you said. I think Mark Ruffalo is an excellent actor. And it seemed like there was a lot, in the craft of the show that could be applauded. And I'm not, I wouldn't tell somebody it wasn't worthwhile. And I wouldn't tell anyone that, like, I mean, obviously I expected it wouldn't be quite that tough the rest of the way, but I was just like, sometimes you just know.
Do you know who the female leads of this TV show are?
I do not. The only people I've seen on screen are Mark Ruffalo and some children and whoever played the librarian.
Oh, man. Well, in the first episode, Melissa Leo, Catherine Hahn, I believe it was, and blast from everyone's past, Juliet Lewis. All show.
Oh, hey now. Yeah. All right.
And Juliet Lewis is predictably a total nut. But
a lot of bad time entertainment all stars really.
That is a fact, with the exception of Catherine Hahn, who in her one scene was as like down and dour as I have ever seen her. I think there's a lot here to like if you're ready to hunker down for it. But I have to say, like you, I think I am not.
And I enjoyed The Plot Against America in the end, but it was a slog. So I don't blame anybody for,
you know, it's on my HBO now to watch later, but I'm not finding myself in the mood for these things all that often at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, it is, that one gets heavy.
You know what I've been doing with my spare time is Community is on Netflix.
Yeah. I've been thinking about maybe jumping in on a rewatch of that.
So good. Love that show.
I haven't visited with it in a minute. Six seasons in a movie. Yep.
Still waiting. Speaking of which, movie.
Last item on our agenda this week.
Unfortunately, Donald Glover might be a little big.
Yeah.
There's two more things on our agenda, and I really like both of them, so I hope we can.
Oh, you're right. I left one out. Sorry. Let's talk about Dead to Me then.
Okay. I really like this show. I really, really do. And I actually went back because I didn't remember how last season ended. So I went back and watched the last couple of the first season. And, like, I don't know if it's just that I have such a soft spot for the two leads. Like, Christina Applegate and Linda Cardellini are just two of my favorites. And they both are so much fun in this. I don't know. I'm just having a blast watching this show.
Yeah, see, I think that is what it is. And those are the parts of the show that I think really work. Just letting the two of them cook, you know, and the friendship that they have built. It's entertaining. There are a couple of entertaining side characters, I think, but I don't know, man. for me, when James Marsden shows up a second time, I started to go, wow, this show is really not afraid of a plot contrivance to keep things moving. And which is, you know, certainly a lesson I could have learned last season.
Yeah, and I mean, look, just the slight spoiler for season two, just the construct of, like, I accidentally killed your husband and lied about it, and now you're kind of not so accidentally killing my ex-husband and lying about it, and season two is a reversal of season one. Yeah, it's all very contrived.
Right.
I'm not here to tell you that Dead to Me is breaking new ground or mind-blowing in any way. I just think it's wildly enjoyable.
Yeah, I think you like it a little more than I do, but I'm not going to argue with that. It is enjoyable. I will finish this season. You know what I mean? Like, it's very watchable, but I think it's mostly watchable just because we like watching those two.
Maybe.
You know, rip into it.
Maybe,
you know?
But they really do, man. And they're so funny together. It's a great pairing.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. Two ladies, I think, who were generally underappreciated at this point, too. I'm not quite
sure
how that happened.
They both have, like, I don't know what to call them. They're not indie darlings, but they're both darlings somehow, right? Like, people have a lot of fun. They may not be as big as at one point you expected them to be, but they both have a lot of, like, positive equity built up with
sure.
audiences.
They're people you have a fondness for, but not,
right.
you might not necessarily
right.
think of.
Right. And you might not see as much as, like, you know, you would think.
Yes, correct. Although this show is doing pretty well if Netflix's own top tens are to be believed. So
good, because I want the best for everyone involved.
I do sort of wonder what a season three of this would look like.
I don't know
what they'd have to do to get themselves there.
Like, I think maybe they have to be on the run from the law at that point.
Yeah, but we can save that for another day.
Yeah, we'll workshop it once we watch the whole second season.
All right, so Brock Meyer ends up. Yeah, huh is the right word. I'm sad that the show will no longer be in my life, although I do feel pretty complete with it. Like, I don't necessarily know that it had that much more to say.
No, I think it finished, but, man, for a show that was mostly about, like, dick and sex and poo jokes, it had a lot to say.
Yeah,
about
really
baseball,
did.
About the world, about family. Like, this is a really good show.
Yeah, with a lot of heart, and it is one of those too that I just feel is, like, criminally overlooked. You
totally
know what I mean?
Agree.
Like, I just never heard people talk about it. We've talked about this on the show, but, like, it made me bust a gut at times and genuinely moved me at other times. And I thought it was really well acted and written and was able to build, you know, some really interesting relationships around this character who was, like, you know, a goof and a sketch, essentially.
I mean, the show doesn't – I can't believe it got made because it doesn't compute as a pitch at all. And it certainly doesn't sound like it has the capability of having the kind of heart or the kind of legs that it did for four seasons. And I mean, it literally sounds like a character that has the shelf life of one sketch. And they, for four seasons worth of episodes, they made it interesting and new and fresh and funny. And they made him into a character that had such incredible depth, bizarre and disgusting and in many ways repulsive, but incredible depth.
Yeah. And, you know, flawed in all these really in some interesting ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, so many interesting relationships over the course of that show. Really well acted. I felt like completely uncompromising. You know what I mean? Like,
and I think like that might
they did whatever the fuck they wanted.
I think
you know,
that
which is
might
great.
That might partially explain why it wasn't more popular or recognized. Is it really was pretty gross and pretty like profane and pretty much all about baseball. And I don't think any of those three things play to the masses at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. That's absolutely true. By the way, I think I might have quit baseball today.
I saw your tweet.
Yeah.
And I have to say, while someone quitting baseball is as natural as the sun coming up tomorrow to me, your reasoning is absurd.
I am not here to argue that.
I can't believe your I hate the DH so much I'm quitting guy. That is rich to me.
It's not I hate the DH so much I'm quitting. Well, no, maybe it is that. I don't know.
That's what
I'm not
is.
Here to tell you. I'm not here to tell you like that should be your philosophy on life. I'm just here to tell you that I'm not interested in watching 10 on 9. Like I've seen it. I know what it looks like. I don't like it as much as 9 on 9. I believe that that this is an aesthetic thing in a religious sense, that this is how the game should be played. This is what I like watching. I don't like it when we play interleague games and do this crap.
Yeah.
And I'm just not, and I know it's never coming back. And look, it's certainly not the only reason to quit baseball. But for me, it was just kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And
the
I'm not here
thing...
to tell you that this is a logical position
yeah.
at all.
It's just
my position.
The only
you know
thing
I mean?
You said, the only thing you said that made sense was calling it religious because this is, in fact, a made-up thing that you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah,
sorry, I couldn't resist the made-up religion line. But the fact of the matter is, baseball with and without the DH looks almost exactly the same.
No, it does not.
It really does. It really does. There's just one less person who doesn't know what the hell they're doing a thing. And
oh God, no.
The whole
and
like
the, thing is,
the romance
like,
of the double
switch.
People who grow
up watching American League Baseball,
whatever.
Like say this, but if you
tell
if
me the
you
last
grew up
double
watching
switch
the other
you
way,
saw.
You like the other way.
Tell me the last time like, you saw a double switch.
Like they barely do anything in between. Like I go to these fucking Twins games, and like they barely do anything with these substitutions. It drives me nuts. I hate it. I hate 10-8 baseball all the time. It's so awful. Ugh. And
but
like I'm fine.
But
like,
it's absurd like, to suggest that 10-8 baseball is only happening in the American League because of the DH. I mean, that's dumb. You know that's not true. And like again, you lose double switches. But otherwise, the reason there's less substitutions is because you have your best players in the game, you know.
Nine guys do the thing. That's it. That's all I care about. I don't want to watch this other thing.
It's nonsense.
I don't.
It's nonsense.
I don't.
You're obviously.
I don't like watching the American League.
Look, that is your certainly your right. But to suggest to suggest that it's that different. It's a silly thing that you NL people do. It's very silly.
Here's the thing is it, and I am actually legitimately curious. I'm sure I'm not the only person in your National League city that feels this way.
No, I do logical a radio, or not. I do a radio show with at least right. one guy who feels this way, if not two. I understand that your position is far from a tiny minority. Lots of people feel that way. I'm suggesting all of you are being silly. That's what I understand very clearly what I'm saying. I'm calling a large number of baseball fans silly, silly people.
Yeah.
And I'll go so far as to suggest that your silliness and your collective silliness is a huge part of why this game is going to be out of our lives before we're dead. Out of our lives.
This is the point. All right. So this is like, you know, I've spent a lot of years programming classic rock radio. And you know, one of these things in classic rock that you have to do sometimes, right, is your classic rock station, you know, maybe didn't evolve fast enough, or maybe you had that morning show that was on too long, you know, and it's hard to recover. And at some point you kind of have to like your station got too old, you know, to meet your sales objectives. And so you got to move, you got to get a little younger, right? And so then you got to put this like fresh coat of paint on your classic rock station. And generally what the, you know, it's a tough trick because the most likely thing to do is you alienate the people who are listening to you now because they're too old, and not actually bringing in the people who are young enough to happen underneath you. And that's what's going to happen to baseball, is that they are going to alienate plenty of people who are here now. I completely understand. And this is the real reason, honestly, I think for me, where it's like, it's time for me to get off the train, is that I know that baseball doesn't care what I think about this. They don't care what I think about this because I'm too old now. Like, well, they're looking they're trying to attract younger people than me to watch this game, and it's not going to work. So
yeah, well, that's why baseball's going to die. Because they're not sincerely trying to attract younger people than you. And they're not going to do anything significant to attract younger people than you. And in fact, I think they're only doing this because they're in extraordinary circumstances that, if not require it, certainly having a universal DH makes the scheduling concept a lot easier for them at this moment, and they need to get games in. So,
but we both know, if it was just this, I could live a year, but we know it's not going to be just this.
What do you mean?
There's never going to be another National League game where pitchers bat.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying that's the impetus for it happening. Not that this. You might be right.
It's currently being pitched. DH year and next, right? But it's not going to be this year and next. It's never coming back.
You're probably right. But again, the point here is that's not actually doing it. You know, young non-baseball fans, they don't care about the DH. They don't have an opinion one way or other about
that's
the DH.
That's correct.
Because baseball hasn't bothered to try to entertain them for their entire lives. Not at one point in their lives has baseball made an effort to reach out to them in any meaningful way. As a matter of fact, throughout most of their lives, baseball has canceled programs that reach out to young people and avoided doing things to sell the game to young people out of a misplaced sense of loyalty to old coots like you.
No, but it's not just misplaced sense of loyalty. The reality is we understand what baseball is right now, right? It's a regional sport, right? Essentially, it's an interlock collection of, right? And so what it is you follow your team, right? Like I watch, 80 to 120 Braves games a year, and almost none of anybody who's not playing the Braves.
But that's not how it was when we were teenagers.
Correct. But that's how it is now.
Well, I know, but that's my point, is baseball has squandered.
But baseball's showing a willingness to mess with that experience, which is the only experience that I'm interested in, and the only experience that San Francisco Giant fans are interested in, and St. Louis Cardinals fans.
They are showing that, first of all, extremely mild interest, I would describe it as, in making changes, only about 25 years late.
Yeah.
So that's not the best way to maintain or build an audience.
And look,
you're right. They're not doing it to modernize the game. They're doing it to make scheduling during a pandemic easier. But you may be right that the universal DH hurts more than it helps. I'm not arguing with you. At the same time, if they don't play any games this year, baseball's dead. I mean, dead.
You think? I don't know.
Basically, I'm not saying MLB will never play a game again. I'm saying it's going to be a lot like hockey's year off. Hockey still hasn't recovered from that.
Yeah, no, you're right. Could be that, but I don't know if they'll recover from this either.
Yeah,
their problems are deeper than the DH. I think that upon that we can agree.
Much deeper. How do we get into this? We're supposed to be done after Brockmire. Brockmire is great. You should watch it. The majority of it is on Hulu, and in fact, I would guess that now that the last season is over, it'll all be on Hulu within a couple weeks. So get to streaming, because this is a good use of your time.
Yeah, and there are only a couple of these debates in it, I promise.
Almost none.
And they're much funnier.
Yeah. Everything that happens on Brockmire is much funnier than anything that has happened on today's Toy Department.
And upon that, we can agree.
Shall we?
Oh, we got to do homework. Yeah. I was going to say, I was waiting for you to say bye. We got to do homework.
Yeah.
We're taking
still
next
more.
Week off. Is that correct?
Next week off. My sister is getting married, and I will be occupied with that.
All right. Congrats to your sister.
Yes, indeed.
And
to her fiance, soon to be husband.
So here's the plate of shows that we will leave you with. There's a new show on Hulu, I believe it is, The Great, about Catherine the Great, which I've heard some very good things about. So we're going to check that out. You wanted to watch Snowpiercer, the television show?
Yes, I did. I loved the movie. Why not the show?
Yeah, why not?
You liked the movie, right?
I did like the movie, yeah. I'm somewhat skeptical of the television show, but they have put some heavyweights in this cast.
I was gonna say it's got some real heavy hitters in the cast too. I mean, I think this thing has a chance. Although, you know, prestige television, like TNT, is not necessarily the place I expected to show up.
I was just about to ask, like, what was the last TNT fiction show that you watched on even a semi-regular basis?
Yeah, I don't think there is one. I've watched some USA shows, even a couple TBS shows, but yeah, I can't say I've ever really, because the only real TNT originals I can think of are the Magicians and the Librarians and all that stuff.
I think the Magicians was sci-fi.
Librarians.
Yeah, the Librarian. Well, you know, there's Rizzoli and Isles.
Oh, you know, I've watched a lot of those. Like, it's not really a show you watch religiously, but I have watched a lot of those. Animal Kingdom, I never watched.
Yeah.
Claws, I never really watched.
You know what I watched a few of? There was Ray Romano and Andre Brower. And...
Yes, Men of a Certain Age. I watched that.
Yeah.
But that only lasted that for like one it. Season.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the odds aren't great, but this one's got Jennifer Connelly and Davy Diggs. So, and it's, you know, based on some fine intellectual property. So who knows?
Yeah. Love the movie. Love the two lead actors. So let's see. I'm just looking through a list of TNT original programming. Oh, I watched a good bit of Franklin and Bash. Uh-huh.
You did. That was Mark Paul Gosselaar, right?
Yes, yeah. It was. And my favorite, Breckenmeyer. I love Breckenmeyer.
I feel like that's a I love not having the DH of.
Yeah, it is. Let me blow your mind. I'm gonna blow your mind. In 1997 and 98, TNT had a show called The New Adventures of Robin Hood.
Wow.
Do you remember that?
Can't say I do.
How about that? Man, there's some stuff in the history of TNT's original programming here. There really is some stuff. They know drama, so a lot of it is drama.
Wasn't The Closer on TNT?
Yes, The Closer I watched a lot of. That's probably the one I've seen the most of all these shows. I watched the first three or four seasons of The Closer.
Okay, I did not. So I can't say I've ever watched a TNT show on a regular basis. So we'll see. All right, we got to get out of here. So let's throw in Patton Oswalt's comedy special. There's a while we're in the comedy special category, by the time we will do this, there will be a new Hannah Gadsby show, which I'm very curious about. I don't know about you.
I feel like I should go watch Nanette again.
It might not be a bad idea to do that. It's almost hard to remember like how incendiary and groundbreaking.
It was a big deal, man, and
yeah,
and it really kind of blew everyone's mind, right? I mean, I know that's how I felt.
It certainly blew my mind.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that might actually.
I mean, how often have we had to like actively avoid spoilers talking about a stand-up?
It's true. Almost never. So yeah, looking forward to that, and then Homecoming returns to Amazon Prime.
Now, did you know? I don't totally understand what's happening here. I just was, when I was watching Upload, I saw the preview and I was like, wait, what? I thought this was over.
I kind of did too, actually. So I have no idea what the plan is here for this next season, but you know, I'm here for it. The bones of that show were really good. Last season was really great. So maybe they'll tell it anthology style.
Yeah, I think it must be somewhat anthology, but what's his face is in it. The lead from last year I saw is in it.
Oh, well, that's probably not an anthology.
What's his name? Stefan something?
I don't know. The guy from When They See Us, right? When They See Us. Beale Street.
Beale Street, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going with.
Yeah. I think it's Stefan something. Why am I?
Yeah, you know, we'll go with that guy. He's good. Yeah.
So, do you know if the podcast have a second season? Stefan James.
That should have been that hard to remember. I do not know if the podcast had a second season.
Huh. All right. Well, there we go.
I feel like that's easily accessible information, though. We should figure that out between now and 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, I bet we can. You know what? I believe in us. I think in 2 weeks we can source out that information and have it ready for the people.
I believe I could fly.
Okay, this has gone on way too long. Bye.
I was trying to. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The lights out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.